This is KTOO. I'm Jamie Deep here with local and statewide news. Good afternoon. Cruise ship tourism will pay for a number of upgrades to the Juneau infrastructure this year. Potential projects include safety cameras along the seawalk, a covered bus stop in the Menin-Haw Valley, public Wi-Fi downtown, a funding boost for public transit, street cleanup and repair, and the electrification of city docks. Every season, the city and borough of Juneau collects a $5 fee from each cruise ship passenger who comes into port. That money is pooled together and can go toward paying for projects in Juneau that serve visitors or ease tourism impacts on locals. This year, the city expects to generate about $21.5 million in revenue from the 1.65 million passengers anticipated to visit Juneau. The city released a list of projects last week that were recommended by both city officials and Juneau residents. The city is taking public comments on the recommendations until May 7th. Typically, the projects funded by the fees are downtown near the waterfront. Other parts of town, like the Menin-Haw Valley near the glacier, can get projects funded too, but they need to be connected to the visitor industry. That's because in 2019, the city made a settlement agreement with Cruise Lines International Association Alaska, which put limits on how the city uses funds, and some projects require approval by the tourism industry. The city is accepting comments on its website. Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration released a long-delayed study on state worker salaries last week, Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports.
The study shows that roughly a quarter of the jobs surveyed pay less than the median market wage. The State Department of Administration declined an interview request for this story, but a spokesperson said via email that the survey highlighted areas where the state is competitive and several others where the state needs improvement. Nearly 3,000 state jobs were vacant at the beginning of this year, and public sector union head Heidi Dreiges says the fact that a quarter or more of the state's workers are underpaid offers some insight on that.
It's no wonder why they're having a difficult time attracting applicants to apply for these jobs, because they simply will make more money in the private sector or in public employment in other states.
Dreiges leads the Alaska State Employees Association, which represents a majority of the state's rank and file workers. A few job classes stand out as especially underpaid, according to the study. State biologists and physical scientists, along with wildland firefighters and economists, all earn far less than the market rate. Law enforcement officers tend to be above the market rate. State agencies have traditionally sought to align their pay with the 65th percentile, essentially paying their employees a little bit better than average. Compared to that benchmark, more than 40% of the surveyed jobs are paid less than the market rate. Dreiges says the state's decision to look at the median salary in addition to the 65th percentile obscures how much the state underpays its employees.
I think the state has done its level best to try to look at it through rose-colored glasses, but when you look at the details, it's abysmal. State salaries have fallen miserably behind.
The Department of Administration, meanwhile, says it asked for both figures in line with past practice. The spokesperson says state officials will review the findings of the study to determine whether salaries need to be adjusted, starting with those that are 10% or more below the market rate. Dreiges, the union leader, says she hopes the study spurs the state to offer more competitive wages. She says the union plans to continue a lawsuit seeking to obtain earlier drafts of the study. The state says those were not used in decision-making and are thus not public records. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And federal investigators have issued a final report on their investigation into the crash of a commercial cargo plane near Fairbanks last year that killed the pilot and co-pilot. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The National Transportation Safety Board report identified several maintenance and repair problems with the Douglas C-54 that crashed and exploded on April 23, 2024. The 8-page document says investigators concluded the two main causes of the crash were a loss of power in one of the aircraft's four engines soon after it took off from Fairbanks International Airport. But investigators were unable to determine why the engine lost power. The other main cause was an incorrectly installed fitting that caused a malfunction in the system that adjusts the propeller's settings. The report says a poorly repaired fuel leak on the number one engine also contributed to the crash. The engine exploded in flight, causing the pilot to lose control as he was maneuvering to return to the airport. The aircraft then careened off ice in the Tanana River and into a hillside about 7 miles southwest of Fairbanks International. The C-54 was built in 1954 1945. It was operated by Wasilla-based Alaska Air Fuel, headed to the village of Kobuk to deliver 3,400 gallons of unleaded fuel and two 100-gallon propane tanks. It also had about 1,300 gallons of aviation fuel aboard to power the plane's engines. The report, issued April 1st, identified the pilot as 68-year-old John Slewinski of Anchorage and the co-pilot as 63-year-old Harry Sequoy of Palmer. For KUAC News, I'm Tim Ellis.
An Anchorage judge declared a mistrial Friday morning in the case against a young man involved in a 2019 Unalaska car crash that killed two teenage girls. The decision comes after a group of jurors was unable to come to a unanimous decision. KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports that this isn't the end for the nearly six-year-long homicide case.
Following more than 3 days of deliberation and over a week in trial, 24-year-old Dustin Ruckman was not convicted for his involvement in the deaths of two Unalaska teen girls, but he also hasn't been acquitted. The judge granted a mistrial after the jury returned a deadlocked verdict. One jury member, David, who didn't feel comfortable providing a surname, spoke with KUCB after the judge dismissed the group. He says it was an emotional experience.
And really hope that the community of Unalaska can come together and see it for what it is. It's just a really unfortunate situation that, in the grand scheme of things, I think it's just really unfair to apply blame to anybody.
In early May of 2019, when Ruckman was 18, he drove his truck up Unalaska's Mount Ballyhoo with his girlfriend at the time, 16-year-old Carly McDonald, and his friend, 18-year-old Kiara Renteria Haste. The truck eventually fell about 900 feet down the side of the mountain with the two girls inside. They were ejected and died in the fall. Ruckman sustained minor injuries, and he told police that he was thrown from the truck. He was facing two counts of criminally negligent homicide, but he went free Friday, for now. The jury began deliberations around 3 p.m. Monday, expressing concerns about a mistrial and deadlock almost from the start. The first note they gave the court raised concerns about a hung jury. That was written just about 2 hours from the start of their deliberations. Despite instructions from the judge to keep trying, the jurors returned a deadlocked verdict to the court Thursday afternoon. Matthews dismissed them for the day, and on Friday morning, he granted the mistrial.
At this point in time, given the time that you have taken, all of the work that you have put in, it's simply clear that you're not going to be able to come to a unanimous decision in this case. So I have declared a mistrial at this point in time.
The judge's decision was frustrating for many of the parties involved in this case, who've been waiting nearly 6 years for a verdict.
There's not a day that goes by that we don't think of her. You know, Kiara died one time, and every day she dies to me and Diana. It's been a long process for 6 years going through this.
That's Derek Haste, Kiara's father. Kiara's parents have been attending hearings, trial calls, and meetings with lawyers since 2019. For the last few weeks, they've been in Anchorage attending the trial. In mid-March, they watched as the court tried to fill a jury in Unalaska. They couldn't find enough impartial local candidates and moved the trial to Anchorage. Still, Kiara's mother, Diana Renteria, says this isn't the end for their pursuit of justice.
That I failed my daughter trying to get accountability and justice, but, you know, a mistrial to me means that there's a possibility of maybe going back trying again.
Renteria says the family may continue pursuing criminal charges against Ruckman. Ruckman's attorney, Julia Mowdy, declined a request for comment, as did Assistant District Attorney Patrick McKay Jr. Matthews scheduled a status hearing for May 13th to determine what comes next. Reporting for KUCB, with help from Sophia Stewart Rossi, I'm Maggie Nelson.
The Kenai Peninsula's largest energy cooperative wants to try and save a Nikiski solar farm that stalled earlier this year. Homer Electric Association's board of directors gave its CEO permission to help finance the project during a meeting earlier last week.
And if we're successful, HEA will own it, they'll develop it, they'll manage it, and our members will benefit from it.
That's Dan Furlong, the board's president. He says the cooperative hasn't actually bought anything yet, but they want to. If it's built, the Puppy Dog Lake project would be Alaska's largest solar farm. The proposed project site is just under 700 acres in Nikiski. As designed, solar panels would cover less than half that acreage. Furlong says the cooperative was in talks with the project developer for years before signing an agreement last summer. HEA would have been the solar farm's sole customer. The 45-megawatt solar farm would cover more than a tenth of the cooperative's annual energy demand and double how much energy HEA gets from renewable sources. But earlier this year, the project had a setback. A combination of adverse economic conditions and uncertainty over the future of federal solar investment tax credits threw the project into limbo. The project's investor withdrew its permit application from state regulators in February. Furlong says that was a blow.
We were, as a board, extremely disappointed because we worked very hard to get that contract, and we were really hopeful that we could add that renewable source to our portfolio and so on and put down pressure on the rates.
Furlong couldn't say how much money the board authorized for a bid, but if the cooperative's bid is successful, he expects construction on the farm to happen, quote, pretty rapidly. The money for the bid will come as an existing grant awarded to an HEA subsidiary. The CEO of the project's initial developer declined to comment on the project status Thursday. And taking a look at the weather in Juneau, it's raining, and we've got a low of 40 degrees tonight. And we've got weather in the low 40s to high 40s through the rest of the week. This is KTOO.